Blog Talk Radio.
We're going to hear from Steve Lerner next from the CIU, the architect of the Justice for Janitors campaign. Currently, he's working on partnering with unions and groups in Europe and South America.
Welcome, everybody, to today's show, Cast of Characters. I'm going to play a little song, which is kind of, I thought I uploaded it properly. I'm kind of new to all of this, so be patient with me, which is going to be a character for today's show, where we have the cast of characters. So I'm going to go into quickly reading the description. We'll play a little song and jump right back into the show. And I'm hoping TJ Thompson will also make it, not really sure. But anyway, we're going to jump into this piece. I hope everybody had a very, very good weekend. Hope everybody is doing well. Nice chat room. The cast of characters on Blog Talk Radio Network are plenty. Yeah, hang on, I just lost that. Okay. The cast of characters on Blog Talk Network are plenty. You think you will have a good idea what to expect prior to their shows until it begins. And sometimes it's cool and calm. Other times, all hell breaks loose, and you never know what will come down. Tonight, meet Blog Talk Radio's most popular cast of characters. Tonight, we will provide a medical doctor and Doc Wiper, who I see is in the chat room, welcome. Now, he's not going to cure all your political ailments with his conservative underground show, but let me tell you, this man is not afraid to do battle. He even clears lines so liberals can call. This segment, my friends, is not for the politically correct. So if you're looking for that tonight, you might want to check out some other shows. This is one where you need to have tough skin. So the Democrats and many Republicans think socialism isn't too bad for America, but there is a Blog Talk Radio personality, Tesla, who I hope also shows up, who simply has a different show, and I love his show. His show is just, every time I listen to it, and even yesterday's show, it just gets better and better. You know, a lot of shows are good because of the people around it, and this is one of those shows, but Tesla is like the root of that show. He puts a lot of work into it. His priorities are very straight, so it becomes very, very good. And also Loki. A lot of people don't know much about the Halls of Valhalla. Loki is a constitutional, at least he's the best that I know of, and I've also invited T.J. Thompson to join in. I'm not sure if he's going to be able to join in. He's doing his show as we speak, so hopefully he will. If he cannot, well, then he cannot. So let me jump into today's song theme, and then we'll jump right back into the show. Let's see. All right. I'm Characters of Blog Talk Radio. Let me hook my mic up here, and if it's going to static, I'll have to disconnect it. I know that yesterday it was bothering, so it was just a lot of static from Tesla's show. All righty. I believe we already have Loki. Is that you on the line at area code 269?
Yes, it is.
Hey, welcome aboard. I think Doc is on there. Doc, is that you with Skype on 111?
Yeah, that's me.
Hey, welcome. I'm glad you guys can be here. Do you two know each other?
We've run across each other from time to time.
Okay. Well, welcome, guys. And I'm so glad you're able to make it. I mean, two of my favorite shows. Loki, why don't we start out with you? Why don't you go ahead, introduce yourself, talk a little bit about your show, and we'll go on with the doc.
Well, let's see. A little bit about myself.
Well, about your show, you and your show. You can tell them whatever you want, just no libido size.
Yeah, all right. I've been doing my show here on Blog Talk Radio for about, how long is that? 4 years now. And started it to try to educate people on the United States Constitution. That's what the whole goal was. And I don't really, you know... And I have, actually, I started my own, I started Premium Pay and started bringing in a bunch of other shows. We have Political Pistachio with Douglas V. Gibbs, Uncooperative Radio with Brian Bonner. On Monday night, we do Patriots Pub. We're doing United States History, and we actually did a section on the United States Constitutional Convention from beginning to end. And that took us about 2 years to do. So my show's on Wednesday and Friday. Brian's is on Thursday and Sunday. Doug's is on Saturday and Sunday. And we also do Founding Truth, where we look at modern-day issues and the Constitution. So I'll
great.
Leave it at that.
Okay, and feel free, Loki, feel free to post your website or post your page in the chat room. One of the things I've when I started in doing this is each week sometimes I tune into a different show, and actually my show in many ways is a stealing of about 5 minutes from everybody's show, 5 to 10 minutes. And next on the agenda is someone from last week, the show that I did. I took probably about 15 minutes of it when him and I discussed the history of Ronald Reagan as president. Got any ailments? You need some cures? Call in, because Doc is your political doctor tonight. Doc, welcome to the show. Why don't you introduce yourself and tell everybody about your program as well?
Well, it's good to be here. Thank you for the invitation. Appreciate it very much. Again, my name is Doc. I'm the host of the Conservative Underground Show, which is heard every Sunday and Thursdays at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. And then we do a Saturday matinee show at 12 noon. And, you know, we have a show that is rooted in real conservatism. I promote diligence, personal responsibility, and we look at things from an unapologetic conservative point of view. And it is a typical talk show, and we take on all issues. We don't run. We don't hide. And I think we aren't as scholarly as maybe Loki's show is, and what he does with his group, but we do try to keep things at a at a 30,000 foot level to cover as many different topics as we can. And that's the nice way of saying that I perhaps am not mentally equipped to get down to the detail areas, but in any event, that's what we do, and it's a good show and a good time, and invite everyone to participate.
Cool. It certainly is. I loved, as I mentioned in the open, I don't know if it was last week or the week before where you kept telling everyone, I got the line open for anyone who wants to disagree. And then Doc would talk a little bit more, and then he'd stop. He'd, still no callers. And then go on and on and look and say, still no caller. And I, you know, one of the things I think I've noticed through the years with liberals, I like it when the opposite opinion calls. I don't like these shows where everyone agrees. And if you think about it, how I got to like Doc's show is I called in and I disagreed. Same thing with Loki. And, you know, I think you accomplish more that way. These shows where you got five people on and everybody's just all sitting around shaking each other, saying, oh, yeah, you're so smart. Oh, thank you for pointing this out. I think that's great that you agree politically, but I think you accomplish more by challenging each other. And one of the comments I've noticed with liberals, and I don't want to just throw that word out there, liberal, but people who lean towards the Obamas and the Fred Kargers, they can't really debate with a conservative viewpoint, so eventually it turns into that's Hitler or Nazism or name-calling. The topic gets changed an awful lot. Loki, I'll let you comment on that, and then Doc, you can follow up after Loki.
Well, yeah, and I think it has changed a bit, but it's, you know, I enjoy a good debate. So, and I'm not going to try to chew anybody down because of what they believe. We all have our own belief systems.
Yeah, Loki, how do you get so schooled on the Constitution?
They have these things, rectangular things. They call them books. So,
what are those?
That's all I've read. About 25 years.
Wow. And you also were in the Navy, I believe, in the Virginia area. Is that correct?
Yeah, I was stationed down in Virginia. I'm actually the USS Virginia.
Wow.
So,
okay, Doc, your turn.
Well, what again were you specifically asking there?
I was making a comment regarding, I noticed people who are very much to the left in a discussion or a debate, how it almost seems like eventually they will resort to name-calling or their response to a conservative opinion or viewpoint politically is, that's Nazism. We want to go back to the Hitler days or stuff along those lines. Name-calling, yeah, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, well, and I've run into that, and I sometimes run into that on my show, and you know, my approach is to do one of two things, depending on the mood I'm in, really. I'm either going to respond in kind and go right after them and let my blue-collar attitude come out and take them down, because I'm not intimidated by name-calling, and I'm certainly not intimidated by what liberals often like to do to conservatives. And that's try to beat us up by calling us racist or homophobes or sexist or whatever whatever the issue may particular be for them that day. And then the other side of me is sometimes I just let them go. And just because sometimes when someone is making a complete fool of themselves, it's best just to let them keep on digging. And that's what the left does. I mean, conservatism isn't designed for 30-second sound bites. I mean, these kinds of defenses of liberty and freedom take some explaining. And liberalism, at the end of the day, if it is in a debate with conservatism, always loses out because they have to hide who they are. So what do? When the facts don't work their way and the argument starts to fall, and eventually you'll get to that point with a liberal, is they name call. And this is nothing new. I play on my show all the time clips of liberals name-calling, messages they send to me via Twitter. When all you're trying to engage in a civil discourse, on a particular issue, and the first thing they call you is some kind of epithet of some sort. So, you know, it does make it difficult to debate with them, but, you know, you can certainly – I don't back down.
Yep, I certainly don't, especially when we were arguing. I'm going to jump – I want you to listen to a piece. And putting this show together, I thought of 15 different ways of having it, with Loki being a very good constitutionalist, you being a fairly strong Ronald Reagan-type conservative. And I thought, you know, I don't want to sit around and just talk about each other's shows or talk about issues, because overall we'll probably agree on most of them. I want to play a piece. This has happened in Florida. And then I'm not going to say what it is, but then we're going to come back. And, Doc, you'll get the first crack at it. I want you to give me your opinion on this piece. And we're going to do that a couple times tonight. The reason I'm bringing these pieces up, because I think it's there's situations where I almost don't believe that this is happening in our own country. These are true stories. These are real stories. And this is the United States, to where it's almost – just listen, and I really just don't believe that this is happening in our country. And then once, Doc, you make your comment on it, Loki, we're going to go to you, and I'd like your constitutional knowledgeable opinion on this then from there. Stand by.
All righty.
If we're told with a larger bill, like a 20 or 100, and you may have to fork over personal information. As CNews investigative reporter Mike Deaton has discovered, the Florida Department of Transportation has essentially been doing that and tried to cover it up when it was caught.
The toll taker says this is what happens when you give large bills like that. It's what we have to do. Meet Joel Chandler, who just paid his $1 toll on the Polk Parkway with a $100 bill, and he's not being allowed to leave unless he provides personal information to the toll taker.
So you all detain people until you get their personal information?
Yes, sir. It's a policy the Florida Turnpike Authority instituted for people who paid with $20, $50, or $100 bills. You give me the information, you can go.
I'm being detained. You know, I'm being detained because of money. So, why am I being detained?
This is a serious, serious criminal offense to illegally detain somebody without legal authority, which is exactly what they're doing.
Chandler called and emailed the Florida Department of Transportation to complain about the policy.
Their initial response was, there is no policy to do this, which really made me concerned because it appeared that they were just individual rogue toll booth workers that were, you know, detaining people.
But the practice continued in toll booth after toll booth. And if someone refused to provide the information, they were threatened with arrest. I can call FHP and they can come here and give you that information. Would you like for me to do that?
That's
the deputy can tell you. Would you like for me to do that, sir?
So I'm being detained?
No, you can come up with another form of tender. Chandler continues to complain, and on July 21st at 7:19, he received this email from the Assistant General Counsel of the department saying, we do not have sufficient information to investigate whatever he was talking about. But earlier in the day, there were a flurry of emails saying shut down the program, temporarily suspend it, and even who should call Chandler and what should they say.
Not only were they untruthful about the policy existing, they made a very concerted effort to cover it up.
One of the reasons the department might have not wanted the public to know about the program is because of the people who were being detained.
I think it's very clear from their own documents that there was a lot of racial profiling going on.
And when you look at these documents, you see that the department changed its policy as to who would be detained that gave a $20 bill, and in fact left it up to the discretion of the toll taker to determine who they thought was suspicious. The courts have routinely ruled that is unconstitutional because it relies on the individual preferences and prejudices of one person. And when you look at who was detained almost all the time, it was a minority.
And 87% of the times where they bothered to write down what they thought was suspicious about the motorist, it was a racial description. Young black male, young black male, young black male, young Hispanic male.
Although the department refused to comment because it expects to be sued, internal emails justify the program because of counterfeit bills. However, in a 2.5-year period, the DOT got $16,000 in counterfeit bills, while at the same time it collected more than $1.5 billion in tolls. The department also says in emails the program will help law enforcement catch counterfeiters.
Well, that sounds like a great idea. The problem is, of the 885 times they claim they've received counterfeit money during this 2-year period, not one was ever referred to any law enforcement agency of any description.
Meantime, Chandler estimates the illegal detainment has happened at least 5 million times.
So it's been crime upon crime upon crime upon crime, lie upon lie upon lie. All that's disturbing because these people got caught with their hand in the cookie jar.
All righty. Okay, well, Doc, you want to go ahead and comment on that piece? You just give an opinion as if it was on your show, and don't hold back on anything.
Well, I think I would have a major problem with being detained for paying a toll just because I happen to pay with a higher bill denomination. That seems to be an overreach by the state. I'm not sure what kind of public safety reasoning one could give for simply saying, you pay with and really $20 is not a high denomination, I guess. I mean, I'm just having a hard time grasping what would be some bureaucrats' reasoning behind this. I mean, sounded like they're saying to stop counterfeiting. And it appears that even minimal at that. Probably nothing outside of a regular survey of money at any particular business or something based on these percentages. And $1.5 billion and it cut $16,000.
I don't know. I mean, who? I guess I don't know if it's a violation of anyone's constitutional rights or not. I don't know. I need to know more than what this report, talked about. But I mean, there's really no specific comment, really, because it's so far fetched. I mean, I would even have to question the validity of this news report.
I actually did, and so I had to follow up on it. I just thought, this can't be. And it was on the website. Then a week later, it was gone from the website as far as the information of this. Loki, based on what you heard of it, what would you say would be a constitutional
be a state issue as far as you'd have to look at their constitution and what it says. Again, when I talk about the Constitution of the United States, the Constitution of the United States is applied to the federal government and the federal government only, unless it specifically says it applies to the states.
I never thought of that. That's a good point. You know, I never thought that that is actually a state issue. The whole time I was thinking it violates your, federal constitutional rights. I never really thought about that. But indeed, Loki, there's something else. I kind of want to just change the subject real quick. You had said something, and this was an issue last week. And I think I talked to you when we were scheduling you for today's show. I believe I want to eliminate many departments at the federal level. And was it you who mentioned that these departments departments like education, they need to be ratified or approved by the states before they're what I'm getting at, is that accurate?
Yes. Well, it's not the departments themselves have to be ratified, but the federal government has to have authority by the states to take that power up. They just can't take it by themselves. So there would be required to be a constitutional amendment to say that the federal government has the authority to regulate education in the states, or they have to have the authority to regulate energy, where they have to have the authority to provide housing for the indigent and poor. You know, that's what it would have to do.
Okay. From that standpoint, it would basically, I don't know of any departments that have done that. Am I incorrect? Does anyone, Doc or Loki, do you know any departments that have been ratified?
Or properly? Oh, yeah. The Department of Defense, though I would prefer it to be called the original name, the Department of War, because that's what it really is. Let's see, what else could I say? Department of Justice? Department of Treasury, which is allowed for in the United States Constitution. The Department of State, another role of the federal government. That would probably go into justice naturalization. Immigration should be a state issue and not a federal issue, as far as what the Constitution says about it. The Constitution allows the federal government to prohibit the importation of or immigration of citizens as the states deem necessary. See, now this is where we get into this problem with Arizona SB 1070 when they're talking about that Arizona has no authority over immigration. Well, yes, they do. The Constitution laid it out. The states are the ones that are allowed to determine who they allow into their state. Now, the federal government, in the same breath, is allowed to prohibit certain groups from immigrating or being imported if the state wants them to. So, you know, this is where we get into the original intent versus what we have today.
Okay. Doc, what's your opinion on the Arizona law regarding the immigration? This should be a good one for you.
Clearly the state of Arizona is protecting its borders because the federal government has decided that it wasn't going to do it. And I think when you take a look at the crime that surrounds border towns and border areas, you read story after story after story gun shootouts in these Mexican border towns, mostly on the Mexican side, because there is a battle between the Mexican police and the drug warlords in the area. It was just a situation the other day where there was a big shootout in a town that killed several law enforcement agents. There's a situation where I think some Americans were killed recently. And, to think that somehow those guys don't cross the border, you're living in dream world. Clearly crime is through people who are here by illegal means is real. And it is also not just a crime, but the drain on the tax base in a particular state when illegals use various public facilities, whether it be hospitals or schools or whatever the case may be. And, so Arizona has said, hey, enough. And they perfectly, have that right to do that as a state. And all they're doing is taking the federal law and codifying it as state law and enforcing it. I mean, it's pretty simple. They're doing what the feds have said they would do, but they're not. So, this whole thing is around, well, we can't ask suspicious-looking people for identification. Well, why not? I mean, if you're walking around in a town in Arizona that may or may not be close to the border or is in a bad part of town, and it's at high noon, and about 15 people get out of a car that's like a station wagon, and they're all wearing cut-up jeans, and they're all messed up, and they look like they're Mexicans, I've got some questions to how many of these people are legitimately here in this country. And I don't think, we all have to prove ourselves at some point in time during the day to do transactions at a bank, to buy alcohol. You have to prove who you are. And Arizona is saying, we need to know who's in this state, and we're gonna take action.
And I also agree. Am I alone here? Loki, you're the constitutionalist. Do you not, when you are sworn in as the President of the United States, is it not a constitutional duty to protect the states of America from invasion? Am I alone here?
No, you're not.
I mean, that is a constitutional duty. And this goes back to Pat Buchanan raised this in a debate in the mid-90s when he was running basically against Bob Dole and current senators and congresspeople. And he not only criticized Bill Clinton, but he says, I'm going to criticize the people to my left. This is a constitutional duty. And, Ronald Reagan kind of took care of a problem, but he didn't when, several of them became citizens. But we still have done nothing to basically protect those borders. And I don't know how in the world that idiot George Bush, what a complete moron he was, how can he declare war on terror when you don't at least protect your borders more than we are doing? I mean, I'm not really sure how in the world you can do that. Loki, you want to comment on that, or Doc?
I'll let Doc go.
Well, I don't think George W. Bush was an idiot. This country was attacked on 9/11. He declared war on terror. I don't have a problem with that. But you do bring up a valid point that we have not done enough to protect our borders. We have not done enough to curb illegal immigration into this country. And there's several reasons why we haven't done anything. Because both sides see some benefit in having illegals here. And specifically, the Democrats see votes. Republicans, backed by business interests, see cheap labor. And we haven't reconciled the differences yet.
I would agree. My whole point in that, I don't have a problem with the war on terror either. I actually think we should have declared a war on terror long before 9/11. You can't. Oh, go ahead, Loki.
When you declare a war on terror, you're declaring war on a tool. That's the tool that they use to fight with is terror. Why don't we call it what it is? It's a war on radical Islam.
I wouldn't
terror
have a problem
nothing,
with that.
Terror is nothing
as
more
much
than
as,
a. Yeah, terror
go
is
ahead,
just.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Terror is just
Loki,
the method
ahead.
Of that they use to fight with. They terrorize the populace. So to call it a war on terror, I mean, look at how many terror groups there have been in the world. I mean, you have, of course, the Muslim groups, PLO, but then you have Black Sept. That's another one, PLO. The Red Brigade in Italy was a terrorist group. The IRA was a terrorist group. So when we declare a war on terror, are we going to declare a war on all those people too? I mean, let's call it for what it is. You know, screw the political correctness.
Yeah, I agree, Loki. Again, here's another point that just never what you just said has been I've never even thought about that. And that's very, very true. I'm very much a constitutionalist. I believe that Muslims want to practice their religion. That's fine, and I don't judge every Muslim as what I see. But I do find it amazing that all these terrorists were from Saudi Arabia. And I'm still waiting for, the Polish suicide bomber in Israel or even for that matter, the Canadian. As much as I don't want to say this, you can't. It's an undeniable fact. I mean, plain and simple. It can't be denied. If I were to say, well, I believe in the Constitution and freedom of religion so much, I would be an idiot to say, no, it's not radical Muslim. It is, period. It's not even a debate. Doc, do you want to go ahead and comment before we take our next caller?
No, I think you hit the nail on the head.
And, I find it amazing these groups always have liberation involved in it. There's no liberation about this bullshit. The bottom line is they beat people down. It's a country club because you're either one of them or you're just basically one of the slaves. There's almost, I mean, clearly in in Iran, where you see with the younger generation wanting to oppose what is going on, the olders have not hesitated to wipe these people out like in China. They don't hit you with sticks. They don't just shoot plastic bullets. They roll tanks. They load up, and they don't hesitate to they don't hesitate to crush the uprising, as I say. I mean, this just goes to show you, I mean, the type of people you're dealing with. And, I mean, there's no other way around it. And, I mean, unless you're a moron or a Democrat, in some ways they go together. Anyway, area code 570. Liberty Sun, is that you?
That's me. How are you, sir?
Hey, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
You have an opening comment, or you want to tap in on what I just said?
Well, you know, to be honest with you, I mean, Loki said it, you know, quite correctly. That, you know, you're declaring war on a tactic, not necessarily a group, and he's absolutely right. It is radical Islam, and call it for what it is, and treat it as such. And we should be pursuing this issue much more aggressively than we are.
And, you know, I want to kind of do what Doc does on his show. If anyone in the chat room or listening disagrees, wants to challenge it, your mic will not be muted unless you start name calling. But join us. You got as long as anyone else has. Give your different opinion. I encourage that. I like different opinions. Sometimes even in chat rooms when they're boring, I'll even kind of just jump, take a different side, even if I agree with it, just to play devil's advocate, because sometimes the chat rooms are so boring. So, and I mean, that's just how it is. Doc, do you want to comment before I jump into the next piece?
No, I'm ready to take on as many things as you got to offer here.
Okay, now buckle up here, guys, because here is Congressman Jesse Jackson Jr. Oh, this is the best of all. I was going to save this for last, but, you know, sometimes when your shows are so many hours, you have the just sometimes you don't want to get prevent them from being stale. But Jesse Lewis Jackson addressed Congress just 1 month ago. Oh, boy, like father, like son, sometimes even worse. How they talk about Uday was going to take over for Saddam, and this other Slanai is going to take over for in North Korea. Well, here's Jesse Jackson Jr., congressman from my wonderful, beautiful, favorite city of Chicago, addressing Congress. And I have to actually tell you, it's kind of funny because watching the videotape on C-SPAN where it has a wider version, he's going before Congress talking about this, and nobody is in the building except for there's two people behind them that you can only see on TV eating Kentucky Fried Chicken right there in the Congress while he's talking. And these guys are just having a conversation, eating chicken, having their lunch. But anyway, it's going to be a good one, guys. Here's Jesse Lewis Jackson addressing the Congress. And one of the reasons I'm not telling you what it's about, because I want you to listen to it, and you get your immediate reaction sometimes when you don't have time to really put your words together. It's kind of a little bit better. But here we go. Jesse Jackson. God bless America.
Mr. Speaker, I believe that the answer to long-term unemployment is actually in the Constitution of the United States. Well, let me say that a little differently. It's not in the Constitution of the United States. It should be in the Constitution of the United States, and one of these days we're going to get there. We need to add to the Constitution the right to a family to have a decent home. What would that do for home construction in this nation? What would that do for millions of unemployed people? He says we need to add to the Constitution the right to medical care. How many doctors would such a right create? He says we need to add to the Constitution of the United States the right to a decent education for every American. How many schools would such a right build from Maine to California? How many people would be put to work building roofs and designing classrooms and providing every student with an iPod and a laptop? How many ghettos and barrios will actually be touched by such an amendment? In fact, very little that we pass in the Congress of the United States even touches the long-term unemployed. Only thing that touches them that this Congress has access to that can actually change their station in life is the Constitution of the United States. Mr. Speaker, there's an even greater America that's in front of us. It's the America that adds to our founding document these basic rights.
All righty. Well, these basic rights. I'll tell you what, Loki, you're the constitutionalist. Let's go with you first.
The founders are turning in their graves on that one. That's all I can really say about it. I mean, what he is demanding is what the founders did not even conceive of and what they never wanted. You know, they believed in personal responsibility. Low taxes, you only tax for what you need. You only tax the people for what the government is allowed to do. What they're asking there is such an overstretch of the federal power. I mean, that's way outside of even what Alexander Hamilton thought of. And he was a hardcore federalist. I mean, he wanted the federal government to have all the power. But I think that was even outside of Alexander Hamilton. So it's amazing.
How about you, Doc?
Well, not sure where to begin there when you hear that kind of stupidity. You know, the liberals talk about a lot of things that should be in the Constitution, I've noticed. They believe this, that, and the other thing should be in the Constitution. Well, guess what? We have a way that if Jesse Jackson Jr. wanted to amend the Constitution of the United States to say that home ownership is an entitlement and that the government should provide for it, then we can do that. And we have a process for that. If he wants to amend the Constitution to say that technology advancements of a certain nature is now an entitlement, we have a process where he can do that. But you see, they can never get these things done because it's just not acceptable to the number of people that is required to ratify such an amendment. So what do? They use the courts. That's one way that they attack the Constitution of the United States. They have activist judges that really don't give a shit what the Constitution says. They interpret it based on international law and what they would like it to say. Or in some instances, such as the guy out in California in the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, who said that somehow homosexual marriage is now a right afforded by the Constitution of the country. And then the next thing that they do is they just bold-faced go against the Constitution by involving the federal government in matters of the state, the 50 individual states, and then they take the state's tax money, hold them ransom over return of those funds unless they do certain things. So that's what happens, and we all have an opportunity to correct that in this country, but oftentimes people don't want to do it because free is fun. Everyone likes free, and when you can get it for free, you know, why go against that, right?
That's where we've come to. I mean, look at society today. I mean, I look at the young kids that are hiring in at work now, and, I mean, these guys are, you know, they're all right out of the Navy. You would expect them to understand responsibility. But what I'm seeing is this new generation that we have coming up, they believe in entitlements. I am entitled to promotion. I don't have to prove myself. I don't have to learn the material. I am entitled to get promoted, and I am entitled to make more money. Well, I'm sitting there going, sorry, no, you're not. I mean, when I hired in 26 years ago, I took my notes home with me. I took my prints home with me. I studied on my own. I came in to work on my own time to get qualified. But that's not the way they think it is supposed to be. They think it should be given to them. And this is bad. I mean, I see this in society today. And this is what has happened over the past 20, 30 years. I mean, this is where our society has come.
Yeah, and I also think what's since 9/11 and the Patriot Act, those rights to which we've given the federal government, basically we're looking at people that are 11 years old. 10 years from now, they'll be 21, and they'll know nothing of the fact that they used to have these rights, but another generation prior to theirs surrendered them to the federal government. Really, that's very disappointing for me because I believe in extreme. I mean, if I had my way about it, I would be cutting departments beyond what you could imagine. I think the departments that you've mentioned earlier, Loki, we would keep. But Homeland Security, Department of Energy, Department of Education, I think what Doc said is right. The federal government is holding hostage with dollar bills.
Absolutely.
And the bottom line is they're throwing so much cash, you can't say no. It's just, it's beyond a jackpot.
Well, go
ahead, Loki.
There's a document out there. Madison's veto of the Public Works Bill of 1817. The United States Congress wanted to come in, and they wanted to build roads, and they wanted to build canals, and they wanted to build all kinds of things to help the infrastructure in the country, and they laid it all out. They had the constitutional rationale for it. It'll help interstate commerce. It'll help with movement of the troops in time of war, and, oh, isn't it so good? Well, Madison vetoed that bill. And his rationale for vetoing it was very simple. Nowhere in the Constitution of the United States do I see such all-sweeping power afforded the federal government. But he did give them an out. He told them how they could get to do this. You have to amend the Constitution, and the states have to ratify it. If this is the power you want, this is what you have to do.
Liberty Sun, do you want to go ahead and comment first on just what Jesse Jackson said, and then the second discussion? Go ahead.
First of all, everything that he mentioned and everything that he stands for is to become a hero within a specified community. But, you know, when you look at the Constitution, why did they write it down, and who was it written for? Ask yourself that.
Okay. Very true.
Go ahead. It was written and it was documented and it was well rehearsed and discussed for us. Okay, for future generations to heed the lessons learned and to appreciate the stability of this new quote unquote experiment and to work hard for it. But we have become such a nation of entitlement and charity at everybody else's forced expense that, you know, a conversation like this, like Loki said, you know, the founding fathers are spinning in their graves because that doesn't even make sense. Again, it's an attack on the American hardworking taxpayer to provide and reward those that are not willing to partake in the American dream. And it's sad. We're to the point in this country where, you know, if you don't want to do anything, don't worry about it. We'll make everybody else work harder. You know, I can't even fathom. I was unfamiliar with that recording, but even fathom that somebody would be that damn stupid to say something like that. To be the hero of very few is unbelievable. He's not speaking for his constituents. He's speaking for his special interest.
If you want to hear how stupid this is too, is that look up his last election, how when Republicans were sweeping, and I don't believe this last election last year. I don't think the Republicans really won it. I think the Democrats clearly lost it, because the Republicans in 06 were clearly crushed, because number one is we had a complete idiot for a president who was clueless. He had no clue what was going on, and the bottom line is America got fed up as we were sinking the middle class. He just had no idea what to do. He was being pulled in 100 different ways. I look at it this way, and this is where Ronald Reagan stood tall. If you try to make everybody happy, you know, you piss them all off. Ronald Reagan knew who he'd piss off, and he didn't care. It was tough shit. And that's the mentality you have to take as president. Obama is in the middle of doing this, too. But go ahead. Someone have a comment?
You have to understand something. When, you know, and obviously you're not – overly impressed with President Bush, but quite frankly, in comparison to this gentleman that we have leading us now, he's a genius. Okay, I mean, the guy made mistakes. It's a very tough office, and I even give a little bit of leeway to some circumstance with Mr. Obama. However, our problems started in this country when everything was fruitful, okay? And I will argue, as Loki and Doc will tell you, I'll argue with you forever and trace the founding of this new personality and face of America all the way back to Woodrow Wilson. It's been one mistake after another, and it's constantly at the expense of the American taxpayer. Even when we're doing foreign police actions, such as Iraq or Afghanistan or Syria or Libya, anywhere that we go, that we become involved in, again, it's at the expense of the American taxpayer. And it started with Woodrow Wilson. Doc, I know that you agree because we've had this conversation.
Well, yeah. I mean, progressivism, liberalism, a desire by the intellectuals in this country to be more like Europe didn't happen after World War II. I mean, this goes back into the early 1900s, probably even a little bit before that, to be this new progressive society. We saw it with Teddy Roosevelt in the creation of national parks everywhere. I mean, sure, we all enjoy going to a park here, there, and the other thing, but who's to say that the federal government should have gotten into that business? Wouldn't it have been nice for the federal government to lease the land to, well, actually, it didn't even really own the land, but to have private enterprise come in and run these kinds of sanctuaries, maybe give out business tax credits or some kind of thing for that? Dwight Eisenhower and the Federal Highway Project. Canals and things weren't good enough for James Madison in 1817, then neither was building a massive infrastructure of federal highway system, of which we've spent trillions of dollars on. And you know, that's the argument you have to make. But what has happened in this country is we have been the victim of our own success. We have a country that, in the last part of the 20th century, created an enormous amount of wealth because we proved to be the strongest nation in the world during two very difficult periods of time for Europe, and we took advantage of that. So liberals seized upon that wealth because at the root of their belief is that that wealth should be redistributed to the people who do not have. Never mind the fact that once you do that, you prevent those people from ever wanting to have. They just need to have. And that's a whole other conversation. But this goes back to Woodrow Wilson, who was a very racist individual himself and had a warped view of people and of the world, even for that time. And this is about seizing what others think is theirs and redistributing it in the name of compassion. Forget what it sounds like.
When you say he was kind of a racist, meaning he hated blacks, or I want to follow up on that, meaning define what he was like.
Well, Woodrow Wilson did not care too much for black people. And really, you know, to be fair to Woodrow Wilson, a lot of people in that time didn't care too much for black people. His views were really to the extreme. He was a segregationist to the nth degree, and he had some other personal issues with certain religions and such as well.
Okay. Anybody want to make a comment before I jump into the next piece?
Well, I think he brings up a very good point, but really it started, and I believe it started with Theodore Roosevelt. With the American Antiquities Act, where he did take state land. And what it allows, what this act does, it allows the President of the United States, in his discretion, to declare by public proclamation historic landmarks. It's not in the Constitution. He doesn't have this authority. But they gave it to him because it sounded like a good thing to do. I know a lot of people look at Ronald Reagan as being the best president of the 20th century. I would argue with that, and I would say Calvin Coolidge. Calvin Coolidge.
And why? Loki, give your opinion with that, why you would say Calvin Coolidge.
Calvin Coolidge vetoed more bills than any American president in history. He cut taxes. He curbed federal spending. And what did we have? What was the result of this? The Roaring Twenties. A time in American history where prosperity was unparalleled.
Well, I know
Loki, to my
history.
I would just say to that, Loki, if Calvin Coolidge would have, and this isn't disparaging Coolidge, if Calvin Coolidge would have come after Franklin Roosevelt, I don't think you would have seen the same results.
Well, I may not have, but he saw it. And actually, he refused to run again in 1928. And that's where we got Hoover.
Yeah.
Hoover was another...
I'm not a historian, but based on what I've read, and you guys will probably correct me, you're a little smarter on this, I compare Hoover to George Bush with about the same brain cells.
Well, what Hoover did was he was faced with a recession, which unfortunately the economy runs in cycles. You have up times and you have down times. Herbert Hoover's way of dealing with the recession was to increase federal spending and increase taxes. And that drove us from a recession straight into a depression. Not only a depression in this country, but a worldwide depression. I mean, we look
Loki, are you basically saying that the trickle down when America hit the depression, that domino affected the rest of the globe?
Absolutely.
Wow, I wasn't aware of that. Wow.
I mean, look at the Weimar Republic, where it took a wheelbarrow full of Deutschmarks to buy a loaf of bread.
Well, a lot of that, though, was happening before Herbert Hoover.
He could have stopped it. He could have stopped
it
in this country.
What was going on in Germany was a result of the overreach on the end of World War One and a few other things. I mean,
well, it was that, but the world collapsed. It wasn't just the United States and Germany. It was the entire world economy collapsed. You know, and seeing today what the Weimar Republic went through back in the 1930s, late 1920s, 1930s. We're seeing that in Zimbabwe and another nation. You know, up on the wall of my cube at work, I have stuck up a $150 trillion note issued by the Central Bank of Zimbabwe. And it cost me 99 cents on eBay. So this
Liberty
is,
Fund. Go ahead, Loki. Finish up, and the
Liberty
Fund,
fine.
You follow up. No, Loki, go ahead. I was enjoying listening to you. I thought you were done, and I apologize.
Well, no, this is what we saw. I mean, we had Zimbabwe. The country of Zimbabwe was the breadbasket of Africa. They grew enough food to supply the entire continent. This one little country. Well, they had good farmers. They were all Europeans. Socialists move in. They took away the European farms. They killed the Europeans, forced them out of this country, gave the land to people that did not know squat about farming, and now they can't even feed themselves. Is this where we're headed in this country with the entitlements? We're going to take away from everybody that produces and give to a group of people that don't? Is this what Barry wants to do? I would sit there and take a look at it and say, yes, this is absolutely what he wants to do. Who cares if a few million people die of starvation? thins out the herd, you know?
Well, I you know, in defense of the president, there is no defense. What you had just said, I think, is extremely accurate. I can't think of one thing, and I wanted, I mean, I'm looking for ways to disagree and get a little fire going here, but, I mean, I can't think of one thing this president has done, and, Doc, we certainly agree. I would vote for GW over Barack 100 times over. I mean, this guy is absolutely beyond the worst, and I think he's absolutely the dumbest we've ever had, too.
Well, look, I can tell you a couple of areas where I agree with the president. Let's just talk about that. I can think of a couple areas right off the top where I agree with Barack Obama. I agree with Obama in his, at least his initial Afghanistan policy. I think we've lacked some serious leadership since that announcement. I think he made the announcement and then forgot about it. I mean, you know, this kind of stuff takes continuing action in things. Things have gotten extremely worse in Afghanistan because of his dereliction of duty to see through the objective. But when he made the commitment for troops and to keep the thing going over there, considering where we were at and what was going on, I think that that was the right decision. I also agree with Obama that we are not going to close Gitmo. And we are going to continue to prosecute some of these people through military tribunals. I agree with that policy. Now, a lot of those policies that I agree with them on, the last two that I just mentioned there, were actually flip-flops from his original position. And if I was a liberal, I'd feel like a $10 hooker right about now. We're still in Iraq. We're still in Afghanistan. We're now in Libya. We haven't closed down the prison, Gitmo, Club Gitmo, and we're still trying people in military tribunals.
Well, that's very true. He is he's wavered on an awful lot. I think that's one of the reasons there's a movement to get Hillary to run. But, you know, I mean, that's just their way of – they're confused right now. They have no idea what to do, that this savior, the master and king, has turned into just your typical politician, lied, manipulated, just – and you know, I don't think – we've had very many presidents that are liberal that kind of came on these kind of issues, that gave in on these kind of issues. Normally it's other issues. Usually it's the Republicans that are the hardliners or that'll come a little bit, you know, to meet halfway. And I think this has just confused them. They don't believe it. And they're frustrated. I'm sorry, Liberty Sun, go ahead.
Well, I basically said what I had on that topic. If you want to move to the next, I'll be more than happy to entertain that.
Okay, I'll tell you what. Well, we're going to jump to a quick break. I'm going to play me. Then we're going to go right from a break into another piece. So I'll let you guys wet your whistle and everything. Stick with us. You're listening to the I'm in for C, Dr. Jones. He's going on vacation. But anyway, and we are with Liberty Sun. We are with Doc, the political doctor, Doc Wythra, and, of course, Loki. We're going to post your links also in the chat room. So let's jump to this and we'll be right back in about 4 minutes. And I stole this music from, Freedomizer Radio, ABC. He has a show. His daughter told him that his music stunk. So she picked out his music for him and, she's got great taste in music. So we're going to play this piece courtesy of, ABC's daughter. Well, I guess we're not. That's not working. Yeah. So, anyway. Well, we won't. Well, anyway, everybody still with me? Oh, wait a minute. Here it is. All right. Let's go to the break. Thank you.
And welcome back to the C. Robert Jones Show. I'm Cool Mike in for Dr. Jones, who is on vacation. Finish up the song. Alrighty. Now, gentlemen, here is a piece from, here is Joe Lieberman. This is another one I think gonna get our blood boiling. Hey, here we go.
You have an internet bill, it's been called the kill switch bill, that would allow the president to seize control or shut down portions of the internet if the U.S. was under some sort of cyber attack. I don't know if you've seen the internet lately, but there's a lot of people out there who think that what you are granting the president is absolute power to shut down freedom of speech. I mean, this is just over the top.
No way, and total misinformation. I don't know whether people are intentionally peddling the misinformation. Here's the fact. Cyber war is going on in some sense right now. Our civilian infrastructure, the internet that runs the electric grid, the telecommunications grid, transportation, all the rest is constantly being probed by nation states, by some terrorist groups, by organized criminal gangs. And we need this capacity in time of war. We need the capacity for the president to say, internet service provider, we've got to disconnect the American internet from all traffic coming in from another foreign country, or we've got to put a patch on this part of it. The president will never take over, the government should never take over the internet. And listen, we've consulted, Senator Collins and I are proposing this bill, with civil liberties and privacy experts. This is a matter of national security. A cyber attack on America can do as much or more damage today by incapacitating our banks, our communications, our finance, our transportation as a conventional war attack. And the president, in catastrophic cases, not going to do it every day, not going to take over. So I say to my friends on the internet, relax. Take a look at the bill. And this is something that we need to protect our country. Right now, China, the government, can disconnect parts of its internet in the case of war. We need to have that here, too.
Well. All right, Doc, we'll start with you.
Well, you know, I'm just so thrilled that Joseph Lieberman would use China as an example for civil liberties and freedom in expression. I mean, you know, I don't know how long that clip was, or whatever points he might have made that could have made sense, if there were any. But to everyone involved, once you make the comparison to China, I think you just blow your whole case up. What's catastrophic? Do we know did he define what catastrophic is? I don't have the legislation in front of me, but I'd like to know what is catastrophic. What events would trigger these kinds of uber authority by the President of the United States? And why in the hell would you put these kinds of tools in place that are just asking for trouble? I mean, that's like telling an 8-year-old, here's a loaded revolver just in case you get attacked by, some kind of person. Well, you're giving a gun to an 8-year-old. What else do you think could happen? You think he's just going to, everything will be cured? You're going to cause more problems than you're intending. And he even admitted one of my points. There's already cyber attacks going on. How many cyber attacks does the Pentagon currently deflect every day? How many cyber attacks does the White House government site prevent? How many cyber attacks are prevented all the time, every day? Do you think people are just not giving us their best shot right now? The idea that the President of the United States, at any point in time, war or not, and frankly, I would argue if we're in a state of war, that's exactly when we need to be using the Internet for communication and protection to find out what the hell's going on. Why would you want to give the President of the United States that kind of authority? And we all might like Barack Obama, or we all might have liked George W. Bush, but somewhere along the line, President Kucinich doesn't need to have that kind of authority.
Okay. This was a fat one right over the plate for you, Doc. Loki, you want to go next?
Well, you know, if these are such vital infrastructures for this nation, why are they on the Internet to start with? Why isn't there a dedicated network just for them that is separate from the World Wide Web? Who says it has to be connected? You know,
that's very true. Also, I don't, in Michigan, I'm not sure about other places, but the Freedom of Information Act basically, the politicians do not have to share their individual emails with each other with the public. I don't know if that's in other states, but I know here in Michigan. I also think this, and before I go to you, Liberty Son, if my money is in National Bank of Detroit, Michigan, I think National Bank of Detroit, Michigan, or whatever, it's up to them to protect their customers, their information, and their networking. Here, once again, where Joe Lieberman wants to hand everything over to the federal government, as we did with the airport, and just the mess we would create. And I agree with you, Doc. The minute he said China and compared to China, that is insulting. This was 1790 or 8, whatever. Joe Lieberman never would have made it out of that studio without a rope around his neck, because taxpayers had zero tolerance for that kind of stupidity. Liberty Son, go ahead.
Well, let me preface with saying that, you know, quite frankly and simply, we all realize that there is a need for us to be the strongest military in the world and for us to have a level of homeland security. But my issue with this is it's another example of our federal elected officials utilizing the two clauses that bring great distaste to my mind, which is the Homeland Security, and then the Welfare Clause. It's just another example of to further suppress and to further control the American people, the very same things that our Constitution warned us not to allow.
Yeah, for those... go ahead.
Lieberman said, we'll never take over the Internet. Well, what the hell is net neutrality?
Yeah, well, that's why guys like you and I can't voice our opinions about liberals. That's what that means.
Well, there's their attempt to take over the Internet. Now, let me throw this scenario out here quickly. Let's say we had a situation where a group of terrorists hijacked several airplanes and ran them into buildings and into the Pentagon and created chaos in the country. And a particular president of the United States sees that there are people saying, well, the government did it. Or hearing things like we have to go after radical Islam. Or whatever the argument might be. And then shuts down the Internet. Are you comfortable with that? Not me. And that happens. I mean, just imagine the chaos. Remember the chaos after 9/11? That's the kind of thing that would trigger this, and that is exactly precisely the time where we don't need that to happen so we can get news and understand what's going on. And if you want to be a moron or an idiot, I guess you have that ability to be that too. But certainly not at the expense here of getting information in a national emergency.
Okay, good point. I think that's right on the money. Also, I'm going to make a comment, then we're going to go to a caller.
little scenarios like Joe Lieberman just described happened in Libya, happened in Egypt, and it's happened otherwhere. And you see exactly what, where it got them. Dictators shut it down. To prevent what? To prevent at that time what was going to be a movement of the people or what, whatever. The jury's still out on all this, but clearly, you see that it gets abused when it's in the hands of government. We got a call, area code 000. You're on the air. Who do we have?
Are you looking at Southern Sense?
Oh, Southern Sense. Hello, Annie. Annie,
hey,
you are
yeah,
on.
Yeah, I know. I Skype in, so you never know where I'm coming from.
Yes. Everybody, this is Annie. She's host of, well, wait a minute. Annie, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself to everyone, tell some people about your show, because we're jumping right back into the fire.
Okay, I'm host of Southern Sense, of course, on Blog Talk. I have only 2 days a week, Tuesdays and Fridays, but this week will be special. Saturday, our broadcast will be in the morning. I'll have Michelle Bachman as a special guest for a few minutes, and I'll be broadcasting live from her speech to the Bluffton Tea Party. But tomorrow I'm going to have Congressman Joe Uli Wilson on, and on Friday we're going to have the fair tax people. One of the things you were talking about, but this net neutrality stupidity, if I remember correctly, wasn't it Google that China wanted to control so that they can control exactly what the people in China can look at on the Internet, what they could surf, what pages they can do? When they turned around and did the net neutrality with Comcast and the others, they basically were doing the very same thing. And I'm always wondering, Comcast and all the others, in their own way, are free press, aren't they? The Internet you can think of as freedom of speech, free press. So what does the government have to do with telling us what we can or cannot have on the Internet, what we can or cannot say on the Internet? Do they tell the New York Times, or maybe they do, what to print?
I think that's a good point. But one of the problems with that, Annie, is that I've noticed, and I don't think this is along party lines. I think we're dealing with an awful lot of stupid people in this country that want government to tell them what to do.
Yeah,
and
right.
they're complete morons. And I think we could find people to argue with us to no point that Barack Obama should have this power. I mean, they're just, and they're in my own family. You know, this was on just recently. My mother, we're a very big Roman Catholic family, and she likes it's called EWTN, it's a Catholic network. Well, we were surfing, and on our way down the dial to find EWTN, came across a rap station. You know, the music, the bitches, the hoes, and the machine guns, and all that. And I don't like any of that. But we channel surfed it, we went by it, and my own mom said the government should stop that kind of music from being on TV. I mean, and I said, Mom, why don't we just change the channel like we just did? That's a better solution for it. But I mean, it's the perfect example that all around us are people that rather censor it. And I'm thinking to myself, oh my God, you know, we're gonna jump into a piece and we're gonna come back. How it's gonna go? We're gonna go with Liberty Sun. Annie, I'll tell you what, we're gonna go with you first since you're a lady. Ladies first. Annie, we'll go with you, and then Liberty Sun, and then I'll take it from there into Doc and to Loki. Here is a piece. This is Dennis Deacon-Sinich. There you go, Doc. Dennis Deacon-Sinich on. Here it is. He's on the O'Reilly Factor. Here is the very, 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 very liberal and. I would say basically the communist center congressman from Ohio.
That's a memo. Now for the top story tonight. We have a number of views on Libya, beginning with Congressman Dennis Kucinich, who joins us now from Washington. So, Congressman, I know you oppose the action against Gaddafi, but what do you say to the families of the 190 Americans killed on that Pan Am jet? What do you say to them, Congressman?
Well, if the president wanted to take this action pursuant to what happened on the Pan Am jet, then he should have told Congress, but he didn't say anything to Congress. He has to have congressional approval, Bill, and he didn't ask for it.
So that's your beef, that he went around you guys on the Hill, not the action itself?
It's not a beef. It's about the Constitution. But President Bush did the same thing, and the courts wouldn't challenge him. And you're not going to get anywhere with this. But I want to know about your – when you saw the tide change last week and you knew that they were going to put together a coalition to bomb Libya, did you say, good, let's get Gaddafi out of there?
You know what? I didn't actually know what you said. I didn't know that until we heard about it on Friday. The president should have come to Congress. That's my irreducible position. It's not. We can't be involved in regime change, but you have to come to Congress if you're going to attack another country. He didn't do that. That's not a small matter, and I'm not going to back off of it.
Okay, I'm not asking you to back off on it, but let's say the president, when he gets back from his South American, Central American joint, comes to Congress and explains, would you support the action against Gaddafi, the military action?
No. As a matter of fact, I'll be moving forward with an amendment in the continuing resolution to cut off funds for the Libyan attack.
Okay, but then I go back to my original question. If you don't support the action to get him out of there, because I'm sure you agree with me, that's what this is all about. What do you say to the
right on that?
Yeah. What do you say to the families? 190 Americans killed. And remember that U.S. and British intelligence, both intelligence service, intercepted cables from the Libyan government discussing the bombing in Lockerbie and the bombing in Berlin that led to the Reagan retaliation. So what do you say to those families? They said, look, we've been waiting all these years to get this guy, and you say what?
Well, you have to be honest with the American people. If that's what this is about, then we should say so.
But it is about that. If that's part of it.
I agree with you. Bill O'Reilly, I agree with you that...
Well, obviously that was just a couple of weeks ago. Annie, do you want to comment on that piece?
Well, obviously, Kucinich has never lost a family member to a terrorist attack. Otherwise, he'd be a little bit different in his opinion, you think? Oh, no. That's right. He's a liberal. He wouldn't be able to understand that emotion, would he? Or the fact that someone committed a crime against the U.S. people. It's amazing. We can be attacked over and over again. The bombing of the American barracks, we don't do anything. The attack on the Cole, the USS Cole, we don't do anything. The bombing of the U.S. embassies in Africa, we don't do anything. The nightclub in Germany, we don't do anything. The attack on the Pan Am Lockerbie plane. And finally, what is this, almost 20 years later, or is it 10, 20 years later, we finally do something, and now... we're wrong.
Okay, Liberty Sun, you got the floor.
Well, that short conversation has a just a numerous number of issues with it. Number one, I don't like to defend Obama. However, he does not necessarily have to approach Congress to enact a military action. Number one. Number two, my issue with that entire campaign is we seem to come to the rescue of France and England militarily when France has not exactly been a strong ally of ours recently, and in fact, in Desert Storm wouldn't even allow us to utilize their airspace. But what it comes down to is the threat for the English and French oil supply as they receive a majority of their oils from Libya. You know, but for us to go in there and take a military action without understanding exactly who the rebels are is very concerning in the fact that, you know, is it the Muslim Brotherhood? Is it Al-Qaeda? Is it a combination of other groups? When we don't know exactly who we're defending, how can we fight them in one arena and support their endeavor in another arena? Now, I will tell you, Gaddafi is a despicable human being. There's no doubt about it. But, you know, America doesn't necessarily have to be involved in everything that's going on globally. And I think we should really pick and choose our battles very carefully in such a tumultuous international climate when our military is not at the strength that it was years ago. And, you know, quite frankly, if you're going to make it about a retaliatory action for an act against the American people, then I would be more understanding. But that's not what it's about. The Obama administration would not pick a side. You have McCain in his wisdom on television saying, well, we know who the rebels are. Well, then identify them for us. This is not an overt operation. This is out in the open. We're bombing another country to the tune of hundreds of millions of dollars of American taxpayer money. to support who? That's my biggest question with Libya. And obviously, the Senate is just a complete idiot that would go into an interview and be completely unprepared.
Oh, very true. Before I hand it over to Loki for his comment, Annie, Ronald Reagan, I believe, did retaliate as part of the nightclub bombing into Libya. And also, I think when this all broke out and the UN said we're sending the French, the Libyans were toasting. Sending the French to do anything, and I'll say it from probably one of the best U.S. generals whoever lived. He said, going to war without the French is like going deer hunting without your accordion. And that's Norman Schwarzkopf. He made that comment. Can you imagine the U.N. saying to Libya, we're sending the French?
Obama is doing this for the wrong reasons. He's doing the right thing, but he's not justifying them properly, nor does he know who these the rebels are. Yeah. He should have been able to identify who the leaders are, whether or not we're actually giving arms to Muslim Brotherhood or to Al-Qaeda. He hasn't done his due diligence. He's done the right action, but maybe at the wrong time and the wrong way.
Mm-hmm. Loki, you want to jump in here?
Yeah, well, the whole idea of this, I'm a non-interventionist. I do not believe we need to get involved in all the world's squabbles. George Washington warned us of this in his farewell address. If you read Washington's farewell address at the end of his second term, he warned the people that you do not get involved in the squabbles of the world. And that is what cost John, that is one of the things, one of the major things that cost John Adams his second term. Because he would not get involved in the war between England and France. This is a civil war in Libya as it was a civil war in Egypt, as it was a civil war in Kosovo, as it was a civil war in Somalia. It was not like a nation invading another nation like what we had in Desert Shield and Desert Storm. We should not get involved as a nation. Why? Let them settle their own disputes. If we want to sit there and take over as the world's policemen, then let's just bow down to the United Nations. Because that's what it was established as. I mean, we didn't get involved in World War II until we were actually attacked. Now, we had volunteers in those theaters, in the Asian theater and in the European theater, but they were volunteers on their own that were fighting over there. To commit our military and our young men and women when this country is not threatened, I think is something that you really have to take into account. You have to look at it and sort of say, is it our fight? If the French and the Brits and the Europeans want to get involved, so be it. If we are attacked, let's take action. But let's not just go over there and play around because it seems like a good thing to do. That's not the job of our government. Our job of our government is to take care of and protect the American people, and not the world. Our Constitution.
Loki, all I can say is, in inviting you here, I knew you were a historian. I knew you were very intelligent when it came to history. But who in the hell would have thought we have someone here who's quoting this, George Washington's farewell address? That is unbelievable. Doc Weicker, you want to take it from here?
Well, try this on for size. The president does not have the power under the Constitution to unilaterally authorize a military attack in a situation that does not involve stopping an actual or imminent threat to the nation. History has shown us time and time again that military action is most successful when it is authorized and supported by the legislative branch. That was said by Barack Hussein Obama to the Boston Globe in 2007 during his presidential campaign. Obama's own defense secretary said that Libya was not a vital national interest to the United States, but it was an interest. So, I mean, will the real Barack Obama please stand up? There it is. I agree with Congressman Kucinich that the president sidestepped Congress on this one and went against his own words. I find it awfully funny, actually disturbing. How about that? It's not funny. That the president seemed to have waited until Congress left town to announce this strategy. George W. Bush spent 18 months making his case for intervention in Iraq and in Afghanistan. And this president made the case in 18 minutes and then left town and went on a vacation in Rio de Janeiro. Our policy is all over the place. It's an irrational policy, to be perfectly honest with you. When you apply it, you can't. It makes no sense. In newsflash, Gaddafi is still in power.
Yep, certainly is.
Well, could I bring up something? The president does not need the approval of Congress to send the military into action under the Constitution. The president is the commander-in-chief. This was debated in 1787. At length, this was debated. Initially, after they reconvened the convention in August, after the original propositions were answered by the convention, and it came out of the Committee of Details, it gave Congress the authority to make war. Again, that was debated heavily. That was taken away from the United States Congress. They gave Congress the ability to declare war, which is not the same thing as making war. You have
right.
to understand that a declaration of war has international implications. It is not authority given to the executive to make war. He is the commander-in-chief, and only he is the commander-in-chief, and that is his military. He can do with them what he wants. The first president to send the United States military into action against a foreign state without congressional approval was Thomas Jefferson.
Okay, Loki, you mentioned that they had debated it in 17. What was the issue then? Was there going on, or was it just an issue?
No. This was a constitutional convention.
Oh, okay, okay. You had said that. I'm sorry. I just get wrapped up sometimes in your knowledge and your grasp of stuff. All right.
Let me add a little
right
bit
now,
to that, if I could. Let me just.
You most
just,
certainly may.
Okay. I'm just want to be clear. I'm not advocating that position. I'm just saying what President Obama said, then Senator Obama. But let me also add this. I mean, he's just gone against his own thought in less than 3 years, or, well, 4 years. He's changed his mind. And that's a pretty big philosophical change to say a statement like that and then inside of 4 years go completely against it. But I will say this. The president of the United States is the commander-in-chief of the armed forces, clearly. But it is my view that the correct interpretation of that in the Constitution, along with the Congress's power to declare war, is that the president should not be restricted in defending this country, and that the president has the constitutional authority as commander-in-chief of the armed forces to mobilize the United States military to defend this country. Now, I look at war, the act of war, as much more than that.
Well, the question is, and I'm going to, where is Congress's responsibility then under the Constitution?
Well, Congress's responsibility would be to, of course, fund the operation, but also
right.
to put their official stamp that to declare war.
Well, they don't have. You have to understand that a declaration of war is nothing more than telling the rest of the international community that
right.
we are at war with these people. If you get involved, you are declaring war on us, and we will take the appropriate action.
But the President of the United States does not have the authority. The President of the United States does not have the constitutional authority to take our armed forces and invade another country without congressional approval.
Yes,
he does not have that authority. No, he does not.
And Congress,
that is an act of war. That is an act of war and would commit our troops into a situation that the Founding Fathers never would have intended for a president to have that authority.
Go ahead. We can discuss the semantics of it. And what I say is, look, there's a certain element of information that we as citizens, constituents, however you want to put it, aren't going to be familiar with. The point is that the Constitution is an excellent document. And the fact of the matter is that the president should have the power. The problem is that we, as the citizens of this country, need to be very careful on who we put in that position. Not to change his authority, but the fact of the matter is that the president did not act outside of the Constitution. As much as that hurts me to have to say that, he can do exactly what he did. And I'll echo what Loki said. The Congress cannot make war. In other words, the Congress cannot order war, to put it in other terms. They can only notify an international community of the fact that we have declared war against another entity, another nation. And as Loki said, that is only done just for the knowledge of people to understand that, look, we're fighting these people. If you get involved, we will come after you as well. That's exactly what a declaration of war is. They don't have the power to make war. The president does.
Okay, we're going to, hang on. All right, I'm going to play a piece right now. Before we jump, we're going to grab one more person in the room. Hang on a second. See if I can make this happen correctly. I'm not exactly sure if that came through, but that was from this weekend. Hang on. Alrighty, that was from this weekend. I had a show, and that brings TJ Thompson into our program. TJ, you with me?
I'm with you.
Alrighty, that was this weekend. We had at our club, we had a competition, Playboy Energy, to see who would be the bunnies. I grabbed a couple of them, and those girls introduced themselves. They said, "And you're listening to the TJ Thompson Show." For those who don't know TJ Thompson, TJ, why don't you take 30 or 60 seconds and introduce yourself, because we're going right back to war here.
Oh, good, because I want to weigh in on a little bit of that. But
my name is
TJ Thompson, and I'm the host of the TJ Thompson Show on Streamcastic.com. I was actually a 2010 congressional candidate against Mike Pence, and given the fact that Congressman Pence was on the Sunday morning talk shows this past weekend, it's obvious that I got spanked. Oh.
Yeah, that didn't work out too good for you, did it?
No, it didn't. But I'm only 27, so it was my first go at it all. So I kind of got into a place where I could be a little more vocal, which is online radio, and met wonderful guys like Cool Mike, who gives me wonderful Playboy introductions for my show. And if you just heard the audio and haven't seen the video, go to Mike or my Facebook page, and you will definitely see the beauty that emanated those voices.
But, okay, well, now that we got that taken care of, we're gonna jump into another piece, and here is an issue that. Wait a minute, DJ, do you want to make a quick 30 to 60 second comment regarding what we just talked about?
Yeah, and the main thing I want to talk about is you talk about the declaration and making between Congress and the president, and in the construction order of the Constitution, the right or power to declare war comes first in Article 1. And, of course, by definition, declare means to say with in an emphatic manner, not give a warning to others. It's just to declare it, to state it in an emphatic manner. And then when it comes with the president's abilities regarding the military, all it says in Article 2, Section 2, is the president shall be commander-in-chief of the Army and Navy and of the militia when called into the actual service. The only thing that can call that into the actual service is that declaration of war. Therefore, the president constitutionally cannot mobilize troops in this manner without the approval of Congress.
That's incorrect. Okay. Well, we can go back and forth on that. We can go back and forth on that. And, hey, who's to stop us from doing this again? I got two weeks of all this show. But anyway, we're going to jump into another piece. Here is something that we all will have an opinion on, and this is regarding taxes. And for those who I find it amazing that there are still people on this planet that don't think we pay enough taxes. In my own city of Grand Rapids, Michigan, we recently fought a income tax increase, and I'm pretty popular on Facebook. I sent out messages everywhere. Let's rally the folks against this. I was the only one who showed up to my own meeting against this tax increase. Meanwhile, across town, those were who for it. They have like 400 people show up. Well, anyway, here is
wow.
God. Somehow I've just lost touch with the world, I guess. But anyway, we're gonna jump into this next piece. Here is regarding sales tax and a possible idea from Alan Keyes. Whoever has their radio on or their internet, would they turn it down, please?
Under your plan to substitute a national sales tax for the current federal income tax, a poor family could save all year to buy a bicycle for their child for Christmas and pay the same tax as a wealthy family does. So no matter how many items you set aside and make exempt from sales tax, isn't at the heart of it this kind of tax something that disproportionately hits the poor over the wealthy?
Can't possibly be. The present tax system, which allows you to escape taxation if you're wealthy enough to pay accountants and a lawyer, is what disproportionately hits the poor and the working middle-class people of this country. Under my system, you don't pay taxes until you decide how to spend your own money. And when you take it to the store and decide how to spend it, if you can't afford to be heavily taxed right now, you will confine yourself to those goods that are not taxed, to those goods that are necessities of life. And yes, that's going to mean some sacrifices. But it puts the question of how you develop your wealth base back under your control. You don't have to beg politicians and bureaucrats to get back in control of your own hard-earned dollars. But it also means that if you're a working person, think about it. Before you have put bread in the mouths of your children, before you put a roof over the head of those children, before you put a stitch of clothes on their backs today, you pay the government. They're worse off than serfs. Serfs used to pay their masters after they were fed and clothed. We have to pay our master before we're fed and clothed. I think it's a trap.
All righty. One of, hang on a second, I got to exit this. All righty. Can everyone hear me okay?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, I just want to make sure. One of the reasons I kept that piece is I just like the way Alan Keyes delivers that. We're worse off than serfs, and how we're begging politicians for our money back. We're gonna start in the order this show began, as far as we call it. First, we're going to go with Doc. And this is right now. You are president of the United States, and you are given the address of to handle the handle taxes, income tax, flat tax, however you want to do it. What would you do? And we're going to go with Doc and then Loki all the way down. Go ahead.
Well, the first thing that I would do is, reform the tax rates and lower them down for the time being, and then put us on a plan to get us off of the progressive income tax to some kind of flat tax would be my preference. I know that there's other options out there, but that's a long process. I mean, that just doesn't happen in a couple of years. I mean, you're talking a long-term plan here. But in terms of taxes, there are too many of them. They are too high, and they disproportionately affect segments of this population, and there are too many people who frankly don't pay them. And some might say, well, you're just advocating a tax increase. Well, I think what I'm advocating is we're all Americans, and we all owe to some sort of, I mean, we shouldn't have any freeloaders, is what I'm saying, to be perfectly honest with you. And then we've got to then put the tax code simpler in order to, you know, prevent loopholes and to prevent, you know, unintended consequences that come from a progressive tax system. And that, in my opinion, would be the flat tax.
Okay. Loki, how about you?
Well, I'm kind of like the fair tax, where it is basically a consumption tax. That you, the tax is not paid until the consumer buys the article. That's when the tax is paid. Now, it may be higher, but there would be no income tax at that time. But in order to ensure that happens, we would have to get rid of the 16th Amendment. We would have to have that repealed. Because unless you repeal it, Congress will never allow that to go away.
Okay, we have some young people around. You want to quickly tell them what the 16th Amendment is?
The 16th Amendment allowed the federal government to lay taxes on income. So, and that was done after the Spanish America. Actually, it was done in 1913, after, and was specifically designed to pay off the debt for the Spanish American War. And after that was done, it was supposed to go away. But you never give Congress the opportunity to have a source of income and not spend it. And that is basically what happened.
And, yep, that's for sure.
And but we would have to repeal the 16th Amendment to totally eliminate the possibility of income tax by the federal government. The fair tax is basically, again, like I said, the taxes aren't paid until the product is purchased. Now, it would be a high tax. It was somewhere in the neighborhood of 23% to 25%. But it would take out all the taxes on the middleman, the taxes on the ore that is mined, the taxes on shipping the ore to the foundries, the taxes on the foundries for turning the ore into steel, the taxes when the foundries ship it out to the manufacturer to be formed into the product, and then the taxes that the product distributes, that the corporations that make the product distribute. It would eliminate all those taxes. It would bundle them into one. So the manufacturer at that time could lower the price of their product. They would have more money to hire more people. And then, in the long run, the taxes that you would pay as the consumer would roughly equal this whole gamut of taxes that were laid on this product through the whole manufacturing process. And you would have more money in your pocket because you weren't paying income tax.
Yep, sounds good. Liberty Sun, you are next.
Well, for the purposes of my answer, I'm going to pretend, if I may, that by being president, as you put it, would give me the same temporary power as king. But I would, if I were in that position and my wishes were to be followed, I would actually abolish the Internal Revenue Service along with the 16th Amendment, and I would institute a flat tax, not a fair tax, but a flat tax. And we all realize and we all accept that the fact of the matter is that we have public services and military and other issues that we have to pay taxes for, education, et cetera. The problem is when you're being taxed without representation and you're being overtaxed and you have a government, as Loki mentioned, that will spend, and by history, by their own history, they will spend every single penny that they have and then argue the next year that wasn't enough. So, yes, I would, when it comes to taxes, I would get rid of the IRS. I would go to a flat tax system, and I would call it a day.
Okay, as we move on to Annie, I just want to say, Liberty Sense, we never agree in a chat room, but I have almost enough total compliance with you tonight. Annie, how about you?
Well, I'm in agreement with Loki because I've read the flat tax book. Matter of fact, that's what my show Friday is going to be. Not flat tax, fair tax, I apologize. That's Friday with my show is going to be on Southern Sense. And I'm rereading the book. Actually, I started rereading it in the past week. I always use the example of bread, you know, because the farmer goes to buy gas, to buy the seed, to put in the ground, and every step of the way there's a tax somewhere along the way, a tax on the gas, a tax on the seed, a tax on the water, to water. And by the time you're paying more than 65% in taxes, because you have income taxes along the way, which gets passed on to the consumer, because you know no company is going to be paying that tax without charging you for it. So you're paying more than 65% in taxes on an item. So if you go to the fair tax, you're now paying maybe 20%. You're getting the item cheaper. You're paying less taxes. But the difference is that every single person is going to be paying the tax equally across the board. You no longer have this underground network of people that don't pay taxes, that are not paying their income taxes, that are avoiding taxes on every single item they buy because of these special exemptions. Every single way you look, I'm a window maker, so I don't pay taxes on the glass. Or there's other special interest groups that don't pay tax. You eliminate all the special interest groups. You end up getting that underground network of people. The pimp on the corner, when he goes to buy his cigarettes and soda, is now going to be paying taxes into the federal government. He's not paying income tax on his earnings. You know that. It hits a whole segment of society that has been ignored. And it's going to turn around and refund the government. Eliminating the IRS is a huge budget cutter. And you take the worry off of April 15th is now going to be just another day in the year. And it's not going to be one people are sweating over and paying. Well, think about how many CPAs will finally have to find a different line. You know, they're going to find a new way to apply. They're going to find a new way that's going to have to apply their accounting talents.
Yep, well, it's very true. And speaking of that, T.J. Thompson is a huge, huge proponent of the fair tax. T.J., why don't you take 2 minutes, and then we're going to jump in and bring Tesla on real quick before we do our close.
All right. The first thing is, the first one that spoke, I can't remember the name, said you would lower the rates, then hammer out a plan. That would cause an even bigger deficit. And you said, I think a couple of you said something about the flat tax. The problem with the flat tax is that the flat tax still allows for gerrymandering in different tax brackets that can then be manipulated continually. The fair tax, which Mike said I do support, is one constant rate. 23% is what it is. And there's a few things about it that haven't been mentioned. It was touched on a little, but the corporate tax rate would become the lowest in the world for the United States. It also removes all taxes on exports from our country. So any goods and services manufactured here under that lowest corporate tax rate umbrella is not taxed to be shipped overseas and sold to turn a profit. The lady mentioned, you know, pimps. You also got the drug dealers, and the estimated 50 million illegal immigrants are now paying taxes when they go purchase their goods, their televisions, their Xbox, etc. And the fair tax does fully fund the governments, including Social Security, Medicare, military, and everything. And it also returns our Fifth Amendment rights not to be a witness against ourselves as far as our tax returns, which we can be prosecuted upon by being a witness against ourselves. And the last thing I will touch on, it will eliminate the IRS, as they said, which is a $14 billion budget. And business-to-business taxes can be significantly dropped to around, I believe it's the 10 or 12% rate. Therefore, allowing corporations to have that more income. And also, along with corporate and income taxes, estate, gift, and payroll taxes are also eliminated, which also create a better incubator for jobs to be created. And CPA, trust me, they hate personal taxes. Their bread and butter is corporations, business taxes, and this will give them ample time to work on that bread and butter. So there will probably be a growing number of CPAs because of the growing numbers of businesses returning to the United States. So the accounting sector of the economy will actually boom under the fair tax.
Okay, and next up, my friends, we're going to extend the show, too. For those who want to stay, please stay. Here is probably the man who has one of my very favorite shows on Sundays here on Blog Talk Radio. Tesla, are you with us?
So right here, Mike.
Tesla was with me on Saturday when we interviewed very conservative Republican Fred Carger.
Yeah, right.
I think Tesla found himself a new friend. For those who weren't around, you've got to download this. For those who don't think the liberals have snuck into the party, we're not even going to go into it. But I was even in shock. I mean, when it came my turn to ask a question, I was like quiet. I was like, I don't know what to ask this guy. This guy is to the left of Obama, and he's a Republican.
Was he worse than when he was on my show?
TJ, you would have disconnected him. I mean, and I know you're like me. You like to have different. I don't even know how to describe it. But anyway, Tesla, go ahead and introduce yourself. Tell people about all your shows, but especially on Sunday. Then we'll go ahead to the next topic.
All right, very good. Well, for those of you who don't know, I'm the host and producer of Socialism is Not an Option. The shows come out on the weekends. On Sunday nights at 9 p.m. is the Roundtable Roundup edition. On Saturdays at 4 p.m. Eastern is the American Exceptionalism edition. And on Sundays at 4 p.m. is the Hot Topic edition. And I can tell you, most of those shows are pretty hot in and of themselves in terms of the discussion. They're great shows. They're two-hour shows. I welcome all points of view as long as you don't turn out to be a jerk like I had on Sunday, and I had to cut somebody's mic. I think Southern knows who I'm talking about there. But that's essentially the sum and substance of it. So we get three different kinds of shows with a little variety in every single one of those shows.
You actually bend over for him.
Yes, that's right. That's why we ended up calling him Ben Gay.
Well, you know, as a matter of fact, this is the kind of what we were talked about earlier before Annie and Tesla called in, is that when you have a difference of opinion, and he had to have been on Tesla's show a good hour, but eventually he started throwing out distortions because instead of maintaining what the discussion topic was, he just, you know, and this happens all the time in a situation where a person, whether they're an atheist and they want to argue religious rights or whatever the topic is, it eventually turns into, well, you want to throw us back into Nazi Germany instead of really just continuing to debate the issue. And, plain and simple. I mean, there's No other way around it. Okay, we're going to jump into a piece, and we're going to come back, and then we're going to have – does anyone have to leave? Can everyone stay?
Sure.
Okay. I got to pop out for about 2 minutes, so I'll be right back. What are you going to play?
Go ahead. Here's a comment that I was very excited about having Fred Carter on as a guest. He was on T.J. Thompson's show, and I thought, wow, I like to do different things. I like to just – but one of the things that got me really excited about having him on here before I found out how extremely left he was this comment about the president. Listen to this. Yeah, well, too bad. We're staying later, lady.
We've got a number of serious foreign policy issues that we're facing right now. How do you think the president has handled the conflict in Libya?
Well, you know, he's a very tentative, cautious person, and that has come out now with his first big foreign policy test. You know, he was kind of sleeping at the switch during the whole Egypt crisis, and I was very disappointed with that. You know, I was actually a Hillary Clinton supporter. I was not happy with any Republican last time. I'm a maxed out donor to her, so I kind of reluctantly went with Obama, and I thought he's what we needed. But, you know, the guy's been a disappointment. He's depressed. He's all stooped over. He's not optimistic. I work for Ronald Reagan. He came into a very dire situation in 1981 with, you know, similar statistics, only much worse inflation.
Hello?
Okay, what happened, Hello? Mike?
Oh, that, no, I'm sorry. I accidentally, the interview goes longer, so I accidentally hit the mute by that. But anyway, I'm going to quickly give a nutshell, and then we're going to set the top. But Fred Carter turned out to be, like, to the left of Obama. And I'm not talking to the left. I'm talking way to the left. And here he is talking about the president needing Zoloft. I mean, oh, my God. I encourage everyone to listen to this. I mean, just to show you, I mean, that even in the GOP, I mean, he's not just an outright gay candidate, but it seemed like that was his only topic. If we asked him about taxes, it was something about the history of gays being suppressed. We asked him about Social Security. It was the history of gays being suppressed. You know, if you asked him about when's the last time he took a crap, the history of gays being suppressed. And it is not your standard Republican. I don't even know how to describe it. I still don't believe I did all that work and I got all that excited. And had he been a Democrat, or at least prepared that he was this liberal, I think it would have gone a little better. However, anyway, basically your about 60 seconds opinion, evaluate Barack Obama. We'll start with you, Doc.
Okay, evaluate Barack Obama on the job learning.
Feel free to use any kind of words you use. We got tough skin here. If we're going to agree or disagree, say it, man.
Well, I mean, I just, you know, I think his rec speaks for himself. I mean, evaluate Barack Obama. Well, he's failed on producing an economy that would produce any sorts of jobs or growth of any kind, real growth of any kind, that is. He has been an absolute failure in foreign policy. I don't know where the guy has any real success or real identity as a president outside of the fact he wants to increase the size of government at any chance he can get.
Okay, Loki?
Barry is an extreme narcissist to start with. I don't really think that he was ready for this, and he definitely is showing it today. He does not understand the job that he took. I mean, he was used to being a community activist, a community organizer. He comes into the presidency of the United States, and all of a sudden they expect him to lead. He made a comment this last week that, you know, he didn't expect this. You know, he can't just get into the car with his girls and drive down to the car wash and get the car washed. He can't do anything that he would rather do. Well, you're not supposed to. You're the president of the United States. You're on the clock 24/7, 365. Your job never stops. He should have understood that when he undertook the election, when he even tried to run. He has no idea what his job entails, and he is suffering for it. And he really is. I think what this guy said is he's depressed. I think he very is. And, you know, you get a depressed narcissist, there's no telling what he can do or what he will attempt to do. I mean, it's the same thing as that Kim Jong-il over there with the Norks. I mean, that guy is getting desperate. What is he going to do? You know, when he sees his popularity plummeting, remember how everybody just loved him in 2008? Oh, they were just adoring him. They called him the second coming. Oh, the Messiah is back. And now they hate him. And it's not just the people on the right, it's people on the left. He can't handle that. He doesn't know what to do. I think it's getting him more and more. And looking at his foreign policy, he has none. The only thing I saw in the first 2 years of his foreign policy was apologizing for the United States. Instead of talking about the accomplishments that the United States has made on the rest of the world, he always talked about how evil and how bad we are. And he's taking a beating for it.
No, no doubt about that. Also, just a quick comment. Kim Jong-il has to be the best golfer on the planet, according to the North Korean newspaper. He recently went golfing, where he shot a dozen hole-in-ones. So I think he should quit and go on the PGA Tour, because I don't even think the best golfers in the history could shoot that good of golf. Liberty Sun, go ahead. You're up next.
He should go quit going to putt-putt and try a real golf course.
Liberty Sun, go ahead.
Hey, man, in the essence of time on that particular question, I think it would be easier to discuss what he's done right, and that's the end of my comment.
Liberty Sun, man, we're like a marriage tonight. Andy, are you back from whatever mission trip? Nope, I guess
okay,
not.
I'm
CJ
back.
Thompson. Oh,
yeah,
Andy, you are back. Okay.
Yeah. I think the only reason why Barry got elected to the White House is so that when he leaves the White House, he can now become one of those travelogue writers, you know, like Forders, you know, 30 days in England on a nickel or something like that. I think that's what his next career is going to be.
We will find out, I guess. TJ Thompson.
As far as his performance, it blows harder than the tornadoes that hit Iowa this week. And as far as how and why he got elected, to me, I still firmly believe it was the Democrats holding on to some semblance of hope of Bill Clinton's revival, which we blatantly saw how inaccurate that is when Clinton pretty much shoved him away like a child at that White House press conference, which I thought was beautiful, by the way. And in like Liberty Sun said, what has he done right? What has he done right? That's the telltale sign that he's got to go.
All righty, Tesler, go ahead.
In terms of evaluating Obama's performance, let's first evaluate it against what his ideology is. He is a socialist. And in terms of his performance, he has done an outstanding job as a socialist. He has brought us Obamacare. He has brought us over-regulation of the Internet now, just last week, with the net neutrality rules through his regulatory commission. He's brought us an overbearing TSA under the dominion of the Department of Homeland Security, which he's in charge of. As a socialist, I'd say kudos to the guy. I mean, he's done what he's wanted to do. However, if you evaluate his performance in terms of American exceptionalism, American ideals, the guy is a dismal failure. Now, let's not sell this man short. Okay? We're calling him a failure in terms of our perspective as an American. But looking at the perspective of him having been born in Hawaii, assuming he was, and being raised in Southeast Asia for most of his young life, this man is not an American raised in the traditional sense of the word. He is a non-American who has been influenced by Marxist ideology, who has been influenced by black liberation ideology, and to that extent, he has brought that ideology to the White House. And this guy knows what he's doing. He is going to be formidable in 2012. Do not sell this man short. Go ahead.
No, he's already got his machine in place.
Well, yeah, of course. He learned politics from the best, the Chicago machine. I mean, and
yep.
let's be realistic about this. What Barack Obama has best going for him, he has got trillionaires behind him beyond money what we can imagine. He took raising money to an all-new level. You always heard how it was horrible what the Supreme Court ruled, and as far as this leaves it open for the Republicans to just outspend everyone, bullshit. Barack Obama took raising money and, you know, this, oh, I got $5 this week from Mrs. Jones and $10 from this. He was raising, I think, what was it, $66 million a month? Just money beyond what we can imagine. And I think basically, me, TJ Thompson, you lost to Mike Pence because you couldn't raise that kind of money.
That's cold. That's cold.
Well, it's very, very. Oh, you know what? Hang on a second. TJ, sorry. Somehow your mic got muted. Go ahead.
Ah, So, yeah, first of all, that is very true because I didn't have the corporate backers. I mean, come on, Mike Pence's brother is a registered lobbyist for Cummins diesel engines. By the way, Cummins diesel engines gets no bid government contract. So how can I compete with that? But, and the one thing I will say is whoever the, I think, again, I'm bad with catching all the names, is when you said it regarded what Obama's performance in perspective to American exceptionalism. Actually, as far as American exceptionalism, his performance is almost spot on to the original inception of American exceptionalism as it was a term created by the Communist Party in the 1920s in America. So he's kind of lived up to the historical reputation of the term.
Oh, no doubt about that. A quick reminder for tomorrow's show, and then I want everyone to kind of comment on this. But my headline for tomorrow's show is, are you today's cable and drive-by media biased, or just are today's cable outlets or mass media biased, or is it business as usual? GE, as we know, owns NBC. Disney, Time, Fox, Viacom, all billion-dollar companies. How can it be the truth in TV if there are so many versions of the same story on each network? Tomorrow night we're going to break down stories and show how reporters, if you watch five different stations, five reporters on the same location, they basically have two or three different versions of the same thing that happened. Now, is the American media open for business? Is it business as usual or brainwashing? We're going to start right at the bottom there. We'll go with Tesla. The question out for the field is regarding the American media. Is it accurate or is it just big business and bullshit?
Well, of course, the media is not accurate. I don't care what media it is, and I include Fox News in that as well. I'm not denigrating Fox News, but look, all media has a certain perspective on the way the news is to be carried. We all do this. And if you don't do it, if you say they don't do it, then you're living under a rock. Look, we do it in our own radio shows. We have a perspective on an issue, and we bring it forward. Now, the difference between us and them is we don't pretend to be news tellers. We are political commentators. So, therefore, that's where perspective is okay. Where the problem, I think, is in the media is that they have lost sight of the fact that they have to be objective regardless of their own political biasness. And over the years, this liberal biasness has crept into the news to such an extent that the bias now becomes spoken of or reported as fact and not as objective. Well, it is said that, boom. So there's where your biasness comes in news reporting as opposed to commentary. And all the shows have it. They just do. But unfortunately, like everything else, this creeping socialism that's come into this country in the last 30 years has even affected our news media, where subjective opinion has now become liberal facts. Go ahead.
Okay. We're going up the ladder this time. T.J. Thompson, your opinion?
As far as when you say business as usual, it's exactly what it is business. They're going to say whatever those writing the checks want them to say. It has become a business venture more so than a information source. And it's because of this why I say it is up to us to leverage social media and make it just that, media. Make that the media outlet where you can present the facts all around and let people make their own conclusions instead of giving them the conclusions beforehand. And so as far as, I guess you say, quote-unquote mainstream, their opinion and their way of reporting will follow the money, as always.
Well, I don't think you can argue that. You know, there's an old saying, you follow the drugs, you're going to find drug addicts and drug dealers. You follow the money, you don't know where the hell it's going to take you. Annie, you're up.
Oh, you follow the money, you're going to follow a politician. Anyway, TJ has it right that, you know, it's going to be impossible. Even if you do try to get an unbiased network, no matter what you do, there's going to be bias in it simply because we're human. And even if you have a network that's going to try to be honestly 100% unbiased, they're locked down to a sound bite, to that 30 seconds or 60 seconds to present the story. So how many facts can you throw into that? What do you throw out and what do you keep into the story? So no matter what you do, you're going to make that story biased. It's just human nature. But as it is, it's business, so good, solid businessmen know that, so they're going to color the story they want with the facts they want. And that's what we're stuck with.
Accurate. Liberty Sun, you're on.
Well, I think any comment I would add would be redundant at this point. I'm in agreement with everybody else.
Okay, well, let me get to ask, since you're so quick on it, do you have a favorite outlet?
I personally take a combination of things. I really, with the exception of MSNBC, just because I can't stand the personalities, but I really take a combination of things, and I try to draw a conclusion based on common sense and the information that's being offered. I mean, it's sad, but I don't think anybody involved in the media is honest. I don't think they have any value or morals. I think they're all trying to beat each other to be the first one to make an announcement. And I have seen in my profession many people destroyed by their shock value type reporting. And it's a shame, but that's where it's at.
Loki.
Well, I think the media has been in decline for 40 years plus. Now, I remember watching the newscast in 1968. Again, I'm showing my age. Walter Cronkite in Vietnam wearing his little helmet with his microphone in front of him right after the end of the Tet Offensive. Four North Vietnamese divisions were destroyed by the United States military, and he came out and said, "The war is lost." He was not reporting the news. He was giving his commentary at that point. Ever since then, I've found that the news outlets have been trying to one-up themselves on the story. You know, who can break the bigger story? And it is no longer about reporting the news, but it is about sensationalism. Whoever gets the most sensational story wins.
Yeah, I think you're right there, Doc. How about you?
Well, yeah. Again, pretty much, I'm on par with everyone here. You know, I think the media sort of jumped off the cliff at about the time that Richard Nixon and Joe McCarthy exposed communism. Not only in our government, but also in our entertainment industry, just how far communists had infiltrated our society at critical levels. And they chose to take the side of the industry. And from that point forward, we've had a liberal media government complex that has been formed that basically, as I see things, promote a progressive agenda in this country. And, you know, that's part of the battle that we have as conservatives is to overcome that.
Yep. I couldn't agree with you more in that sense. And the last topic of the night, first of all, thank you to everyone for being here. I mean, this has just been great. But we're going to touch the last subject, probably with the best, and this is a quick review of Wednesday's show. I want you to agree or disagree with me, and, hey, nothing's wrong with closing on a little combat if you disagree. And the title of my show for Wednesday is Black Owned, and it's titled Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton for 30 years now have been looked at as the gods of the black communities. Maxine Waters, in her 18th year as Congresswoman, 9 terms, the goddess of the black America. As these so-called black leaders emerge in the big-time multimillionaires of America, the clueless blacks continue in record numbers to worship and idolize them as they did as Barack Obama promised prior to his election. What is being overlooked is the fact that these three have emerged is insanely rich individuals. Jesse Jackson is, he's not close, but he's on his way to being a billionaire. There are a record number of millionaire blacks in the United States and a record number of billionaires worldwide. Record numbers. Of course, some of them may be dictators, but so be it. Today's show, I'm gonna have some individuals who are black who do BTR shows. I've invited the left, and I've invited the conservatives, and hopefully they'll come. But in that special, we're gonna go in depth and in detail. I'm gonna make a comment, and I'm gonna let you guys follow it up, agree or disagree. And like I said, don't hesitate to disagree. It is my opinion that these individuals have purposely beat down the black community, charging racial problems and creating racial tensions simply for their own individual wealth and gain, as their income has just skyrocketed beyond what I could possibly ever imagine as far as wealth, when, in fact, the opposite of helping blacks is their goal. The NAACP, Jesse Jackson, personally took charge of making sure that they lost cases so they could martyr the victims. Regardless of whether they were innocent, they still had to lose so many cases in order to keep the hatred and the emotion and the fire going. These people are frauds and fakes, and the black community are idiots for following these people for decades. They are going nowhere because they're following the wrong people. We'll start off with the way the show began. We'll start off with Doc. Thank you for being here. Your closing, your comment on that.
Well, racism is big business in this country and has been for a long time. And it's clearly fueled and cultivated on the radical left and within many members of the black community who have made a living off of this for a long time. I have said for years, Jesse Jackson is nothing more than a race-baiting poverty pimp, and he has in the process, for his own personal gain, sold out many of the most vulnerable people in this country who happen to be inner-city blacks who are living in war zones, who have no way out and are being told to vote as you're told and to vote Democrat. And that way you'll continue to get what's yours instead of trying to pick yourself up and get yourself out of the mess that you happen to be in through no fault of your own in many cases. And that's sad. If any group of people in this country today is proof that hard work and determination can overcome all obstacles, it is the black community who have had to overcome quite a bit as people. And why they have turned their back on the power of the individual in favor of turning their souls over to the state and people like Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton is beyond me. It just goes to show you just how hurtful government can be and how ignorant people are who claim to be their leaders.
Very good. Let's see. Loki.
You're absolutely right. That's it. I mean, what more can I say?
Liberty's time. Let's see if we're gonna bat 1,000 here today. You're up.
I concur.
Wow, that was quicker than Loki. Annie?
I'll just remind people of a book that Jesse Jackson wrote when just before he ran against Bill Clinton for the presidency. If you remember, he was telling you how to become a reverend and make yourself your first $1 million. And he put his two sons up as examples of how they became millionaires out of becoming reverends.
Well, we played his son, the congressman, T.J. Thompson.
Every self-respecting black man and woman that I know despise the hell out of both of those men, Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson, because, as they say when we get into the conversations, they're not representing the black community, they're representing themselves, as we've highlighted. But the one thing I will say, I think it was Doc maybe that said it, is you said that racism's fueled by the radical left. Let's not forget that racism is also fueled by the radical right. We got these Hitler wannabe youth skinhead guys that they're doing their part to perpetuate the divide as well. And I'm sure there are individuals on that side getting their money. But let's not forget Tom Metzger, who we all remember, if anybody remembers the classic video from the Geraldo Rivera show with the KKK and that big brouhaha. That man has actually ran for Congress many times here in the state of Indiana. Thank God, unsuccessfully. So racism is not only perpetuated by these two whores of their race, but they are feeding off the perpetuations of others on the opposing side. It's kind of like in the Civil War, you would have guys from the North and the South, they would hold conversations with each other across the river at night. It's kind of the same thing we have going on here. They hate each other in the daylight, but when darkness falls, they're kind of thanking each other, you know, in a backwoods, backslapping kind of way. So it's, sure, a lot of blame goes on them for not just the public relations aspect of how the black community is viewed by so many, but also the abuse of the black community. And I think they both need just good old-fashioned ass whippings because of it. Because how is this any different than human smuggling and human trafficking? The only difference is the body stays there. It's the premise of it that they're smuggling.
Yep, very good. Tesler.
Well, I think one of the things that conservatives have a bad tendency to do is that they tiptoe around the issue of black racism. Now, look, let's face it. One of the driving factors in the high black support of Obama in the last election was that many of these blacks hated white folk. And folks like Jesse Jackson use that hatred, that class warfare, in order to profit their own. I dare say that there is probably a higher percentage of black racism in the black community than there is of white racism in the white community. And as a result, it's there. And people don't like to talk about it. They don't like to say it. They don't like to address it. But the fact of the matter is there's a huge amount of racism out there because you've got leaders like Jackson and Obama promoting this black liberation theology that keeps the classes divided. They don't want the black folks to understand and enjoy the fruits and benefits of capitalism, because if they do, and those I know that do, want nothing to do with the likes of Jackson and those folks. Go ahead.
My personal opinion is that if an individual with the NAACP comes to help, because the group supposedly the NAACP in some ways has become like the Right to Life. The Right to Life is there to protect life, but it's become such a billion-dollar industry now, they need to keep it going. And I think when the NAACP comes to the rescue of somebody who is innocent, who is falsely accused, but yet they purposely lose this case to martyr him, that is unconscionable. I cannot even imagine how horrible that is with this person who it's just such a false premise. And it's now openly known regarding that. And before we go to the closings and we'll go to Doc, I want to make a comment. Jesse Jackson also wrote, somebody wrote a book on Jesse Jackson called Shakedown, about how he shakedowns companies. Well, he made a big mistake. I don't know what the name of the company is, but it's an Italian-based that has, I believe, it's kind of mob-owned or whatever. He made an attempt to shake it down.
Mistake.
Yeah. Well, Jesse Jackson and his Nation of Islam little ghetto boys were surrounded by guys three times their size. The guy got one inch from Jesse Jackson's face and says, "You better leave now or you'll never make it." Says, "You say a word about this meeting." He says, "I got all kinds of shit on you I can throw, Jesse." Nothing was ever said about this until this individual mobster was ready to die. He wrote some memoirs on it. Anyway, guys, gals, this has been great. We're going to have everyone do a close. We'll start with Doc. And Doc Weiser, thank you so much for being here. Go ahead. You have a 60-second close.
Well, I'd like to thank everyone for participating here. It's been fun. It's always fun to talk to folks around the country on their points of view on particular issues. I certainly enjoy it and look forward, if you have the time in your schedule, stop by the show, the Conservative Underground Show,
feel free to call in, participate, talk in the Democracy Zone, whatever it is that you feel comfortable with. We would be honored to have you there, and tell a friend to tell a friend.
Doc, where are you located? Where do you live?
I am in Central Ohio.
Central Ohio? Okay, great. Thank you. Loki, first, where if you don't mind saying what city you're in, Loki, and state, and then go ahead. You have a one-minute close.
Well, if anybody can find it on the map, it's called Water Valley, Michigan, in southwest Michigan.
They used to have great high school football teams, Water Valley. They were dominant back in the '80s and '90s.
Yes, they were. Little
so
bitty town. I would like to thank everybody here and thank it, you know, for listening to my views and stuff. And like I said, I'm a constitutional conservative. I've been studying the Constitution for 25 plus years. And I think that for this country to survive is to get back to our constitutional republic and rein in the federal government to doing only what they should be allowed to do under the Constitution.
Thank you. Liberty Sun.
God bless you. God bless
you.
Well, what
city are you in?
I'm in Philadelphia.
Okay. Go ahead. 1 minute.
No, I don't need a minute. I just, as I was starting to say, God bless you. God bless everybody for coming. Be safe. Thank you and good night.
Yeah. Annie?
I'm in Beaufort, South Carolina, the home of Parris Island Marine Corps Recruit Depot and the home of the Marine Corps Air Station. I have been carrying the very same Constitution in my purse since 1975. So, yes, I think I know the Constitution a little bit. My show was Southern Sense on Blog Talk Radio. And I wasn't born in the South, but I got myself down here as soon as I could. So tune in on Tuesdays and Fridays and listen to me throw some BS over the air.
All right. T.J. Thompson?
Yep, I'm T.J. Thompson. Obviously, I'm Indianapolis, Indiana. You guys can catch me Monday through Friday on streamcastic.com for the T.J. Thompson Show, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. Eastern. I want to thank everybody for allowing me to speak, getting my opinions out there. And it's been great listening to all you guys. And if anyone of you want to keep in touch, keep in contact, you can find me on Facebook. It's facebook.com/TJ Thompson. Or if that's just too long, go to TJThompson.com, and all the links are there as well.
All righty. Kessler.
Hey, thank you very much, Mike. As always, a pleasure being with you. Always enjoy discussing these political topics with you. Don't forget, ladies and gentlemen, you've got Socialism is Not an Option every Friday night at 9 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Saturdays, 4 p.m. Sundays. And believe me, those are three different kinds of shows that I know you'd enjoy in terms of the discussion and how good those discussions really get. Remember always, too, that we need to keep fighting the battle against these liberals and socialists. We cannot give way. There is no halfway point to meet anymore. This is a political war, and it is for the very salvation of this country. And 2012 is the most important election yet in our lifetime.
I couldn't agree with you more. And in this close, everybody, stay tuned and listen. I think, Tesla, here's a perfect close for this wonderful show and those wonderful comments, everybody. Thank you very much.